Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Kendall Raisler, your host. Today, we have an exciting guest with extraordinary background on our podcast. I would like to welcome Scott Steele, as he possesses a wealth of knowledge and expertise as the CEO of Citizens Bank Weston. He brings invaluable insights, so brace yourself for an engaging and informative episode. Thanks for joining us today, Scott.
Kendall, thank you for having me, and thank you for that great introduction.
Real pleasure. Before we dive into our discussions, we're eager to offer our listeners a deeper understanding of your background. Could you please share a brief bio and some highlights and key milestones in your professional journey?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up right here in my home state of West Virginia. Graduated high school many, many years ago now. Attended West Virginia University. Yeah. And, you know, at the time, you know, the economy was kind of tough. Certainly was in the state anyway. This is the mid-90s. So after a pretty exhaustive search trying to find work in West Virginia, I ended up moving to North Carolina in Charlotte, which is a pretty big banking capital for the East Coast. I got into banking there, was a management trainee for, at the time, was the largest bank in the country, and really cut my teeth in banking with the big banks, and left the bank I was with to go with a more regional bank that was headquartered in Charleston, West Virginia. Well, that bank was bought out shortly after me arriving. So I got into the community banks, and I guess it would have been, gosh, maybe 20 so years ago that I started in the community banking piece of it, helped start a couple of banks. And before coming to Citizens Bank of Weston, I was the president and CEO of the Bank of Fincastle right outside of Roanoke, Virginia. Worked there as the CEO for 7 years until the bank was acquired. And then I had the opportunity to move back here to my home state close to WVU where I went to college. So now I'm a community bank CEO right here in my home state, and I can catch some Mountaineer games on the weekends. A lot of fun.
That's awesome. Brings you right back to your young ties. I love that. That is very interesting. When I'm listening to your bio, that you are actually the first CEO we've had on our podcast that has actually went through an acquisition. I'd like to take you back to that for a minute so our listeners can understand. I'd like to understand how it happened, the process, what you felt in it, and how you decided to tackle it. And that's a lot of questions all at once, but if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you some thoughts on that. Certainly being acquired, whether you're entry-level position, mid-management, upper management, or even the CEO, it's scary. I mean, it's a scary proposition to go through. So the acquiring institution has got to be mindful and sensitive to that. And I was fortunate to go through the process with a company that was. But there's a lot of moving pieces of it. And I would say in the very best of scenarios where you've got a willing seller and a willing acquirer, and a good cultural fit, and everything just looks beautiful on paper. In the very best of scenarios, it's still a very big struggle to go through, and there's a lot of work involved. So you have to have a team that's up for it. We weren't blindsided when this happened. When I went to the Bank of Fincastle, this would have been in 2015. The bank was still sort of struggling from the 2009 real estate fallout. And there were a lot of issues there that they were still trying to get resolved. We had losses the first couple of years I was there, and the bank had never really lost money before. It had been around for 140-some years, struggled maybe back during the 1930s or whatever, but it had really had a good winning streak of being a successful bank. But 2009 was really hard on that bank, and we had to go through and implement the Dodd-Frank regulations and do a lot of things that the bank really wasn't prepared for, cost a lot of money, and we had to transition ourselves, and we needed more capital. We needed much more capital than we had. And we found that capital with institutional shareholders that had a plan in mind for the bank to grow the bank. And we worked through that plan. I think we did really well for the shareholders who invested in us. But being part of a merger was always in the conversation from the time that we knew we needed that additional capital. And I think that our staff was aware of that. And it got to the point where it's just a matter of who's the best fit. I mean, what's this transition going to look like? So we were able to find a bank that was comfortable for us. And like I say, there's always going to be challenges where there's going to be turnover, there's going to be uncertainty. Certainly, you've got competitors that are going to try to take advantage of that situation if you're going through a transaction. Now, all of a sudden, your customers are worried, and the competitors do that. I mean, they're going to try to kick some dirt in your face when you're more focused on back office operations than you really are going out there and making sales calls. So, that was a transition to go through. And I had been through it before in other companies that I'd worked with, but I'd not gone through it as the CEO. So you really have to draw on the experiences that you've had when you've gone through it. There's a lot of questions that your customers are asking, that your employees are asking, that you may not necessarily have the answer to, and that's going to be something new. That was very new to me, that I didn't have the answer. And as a CEO, you're expected to have it. So it was a matter of trying to find out with the new company who's doing what at that company and getting your people the right information. Ultimately, it took time to go through that acquisition. But we got through it. And at the end of the day, I was looking for another challenge, and here I am. So, that's kind of painting a broad picture without too many specifics, but it was a scary time for a lot of folks. But ultimately it worked out.
I can imagine scary for everybody involved, and mostly for yourself, but you came out of it very well and moved into the CEO position of Weston, which is awesome. And if you could look back at yourself just before you moved into the new CEO role, what advice would you give yourself as that CEO now?
That's a good question, because when I stepped into the position, you really quickly learn that you don't know as much as you thought you did. Because in my career, I had worked for larger banks. I'd seen a lot of things happen. I'd been involved in mergers and acquisitions before. I'd helped start banks before, not as a CEO, but as a senior person in the loan department. So you really felt like you had a command of everything that you needed to have. And then you get into the CEO role, and it's a lot of the little things that you maybe weren't as experienced at with as you maybe thought that you were. Even though I may be able to quote you policy, and I may be able to write a policy for you, and I may be able to have a command over this regulation that's out there, when you have personnel issues and teller issues and those types of intangibles, maybe even board members who don't necessarily get along with each other. How do you navigate that? How do you manage that? Because when you're in the CEO role, people expect you to be able to solve those problems. And I can solve a lot of complicated financial problems, but I might not be able to solve a problem of we don't have enough teller help on a Friday afternoon when we're busy. And the phone's ringing, and you've got to be able to dive in and navigate that process when you don't really know how to run a teller window, even though you're the CEO. So it's those types of things where you've really got to have good communication skills. You got to have good sales skills. I mean, no matter, even if you, I would say, as a community banker, if you came up through the ranks, let's say through the back office or through the credit department or maybe even as a CFO, now you're in a role where you've never really had to sell before. You had great salespeople doing that position for you. You've got to be able to talk the talk and talk your way through some of those situations. That's probably the piece of advice I would give myself, because I wasn't as good at that as I could have been going into that role.
Well, there's an old saying, the older we get, the less we know, because the more we find out that we don't have all the answers.
Right.
And that's been my experience. And I'm looking and listening to what you're saying, and I'm going, it is so amazing how many different hats you have to wear and how you have to spin and be the expert on every single piece of it. So that begs the question to me. When you jumped into the role for Citizens Bank Weston, What was your first priorities on your first day as CEO? What did you like? You walked in, here you are. It's you got to make changes. You got to do things. So what were they?
So after going through what I had went through from my prior bank, I really wanted to come into the position with my eyes wide open in making determinations for myself, because I certainly learned something from my prior experience that when you take the job, it may not be as rainbows and sunshine as they make it out. And they may not even know that there's problems. And I think that was probably part of the problem at the prior bank was there were problems there that we just didn't really know about until we dug in there and found out that we had problems that we weren't aware of. So I didn't want to come in and make a bunch of changes. I wanted to come in and learn how things operated here, sort of take some mental notes and maybe even take notes on things that I wanted to change over time. But I really didn't want to come in and make a bunch of changes immediately because, number one, I didn't feel like I needed to. The bank here had been operating really well for a really long time. So my first order of business was do no harm, get to know the staff, and get to learn how things are done here so that when I do want to implement changes, I know the best, most efficient way of doing that. And I'll tell you this, one thing that I've also learned too is for small banks like us, we're $260 million in assets, which is about the same size as the Bank of Fincastle was when it sold. One of the things that a bank like us has to be able to do well is adapt to change because change is going to happen. You may be doing one thing really well for a really long time and been very successful at it, but regulations are going to change, the economy is going to change, technology is going to change, your customer attitudes are going to change, your employees are going to retire and you're going to have to replace them. I mean, things are going to change. And if you have an organization that can quickly adapt to change, you're going to be successful in the long term. If you're not able to change, which my prior bank really struggled with change, and that was one of the things that we had to address. I wanted to make sure when I got here, I knew how change happened, what it takes to implement change, and start to tackle the things that I want to change first. Because as good as the bank is, I mean, every bank's got its challenges, and we've got some challenges that we need to work on. And if we've got to change process, change policy, maybe get the board to vote on some things to implement change, change our strategic objectives, how do we go about doing that, and what's the best, most efficient way of doing that? So when I got to the role here, I wanted to learn how things are done, learn things for myself. And then learn how change is made in this organization. And I tell you, I've been pleasantly surprised. I'm very fortunate to be here where I'm at because this bank has a long history of solid operations. The prior CEO here, I've got a great relationship with that I didn't have at the prior bank that I was with. And it's really a good situation. It's a great company.
So, did you get a chance to have a little bit of time with the prior CEO when you first come into this role, or were you thrown in all by yourself? How did that happen?
No, I did. I was actually recruited here from the CEO who was retiring, and is a good friend of mine today. But I really didn't know much about Citizens Bank of Weston, and I didn't know him at all when I first got the phone call. But we all, community bankers. I mean, we kind of travel in the same circles, so we certainly knew of each other. And once I started here and got to spend some time with him, I would say he was very, very graceful about his exit. He wanted to retire. Been working for this company for a long time. Actually had 50 years in banking when he retired. So he'd been around for a long time. But he wasn't trying to, let's say, hold on to things or even as a director today, he's not trying to manage the bank. And I tell you, that is, kudos to him for being that way because that could really gum the system up, and I've seen that happen in my past. I've certainly dealt with that, and I've seen that in other organizations where you've got, retiring management that's just not ready to retire and not ready to let go, and they're trying to salvage a legacy maybe. And the prior CEO here has really done a fabulous job of working through this transition. It's made my job a whole lot easier.
That is wonderful. It's nice to be able to get that in for the transition because, as we all know, when you move into the new CEO position, One of the largest challenges is the people that you have with inside of your business now. Never mind your consumers on the outside. What did you implement? What cohesive ways did you motivate the team? Because you're a big change to them. You know, there's lots of feelings, emotions going through their minds as well. How did you rally the troops, so to speak, in order to move it forward so that they wanted to go with your direction?
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. Through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment, our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
Yeah, you know, without getting into too many details that I really can't give to you, you know, we had reasons to want to grow the bank, and expand beyond what where the banking circles were and the banking market was in the past. Our board was certainly open to doing more what I would call out of market business, out of the primary territory business. And I had those connections. We brought on another commercial lender who has great connections, you know, throughout the state of West Virginia. And that's been really, really good for us. So we started bringing in business of the type that I would say a lot of our back office and processor people had never really seen before. Not that they're overly complicated, but they're certainly more complicated than what we have done in the past. So you've got to paint the picture to the folks as to why are you doing this? You know, we're not doing it for our own personal glory. We're not doing this, you know, just because we know how. There's a real financial reason why we're trying to do these things, and that'll be meaningful to the employees because they understand in the long run, you know, we may have been here for 125 years, but we want to be here for another 125 years. We don't want to get ourselves in a situation where we're just stagnant, and you know, ultimately the shareholders want to do something that we may not want to do as employees. So we've been able to make our people understand why we're doing these things and showing them the bottom line results of it, and it's been exciting.
That is exciting. I would like to also ask you one other question. In your role, spinning that many hats and plates all at once takes a lot of your time up, and that time can roll into your personal time. So how do you keep a good life work balance? Because a lot of CEOs that we've spoken to, that has been a large challenge. What have you implemented and how have you done that to manage that?
You know, technology can help with that. Because if I'm at home and I've got my cell phone and I've got my computer, I can easily deal with something as opposed to coming into the office. And you're always sort of connected to the bank. And I know that's part of the problem that you're asking me about. Yeah, but realistically, I've got a supportive family that knows and have known for years that this is I'm absorbed in the community banking life. So that makes it easier on me than maybe in most family or some other family dynamics. It may not be as easy. So if I were to call my wife and say, look, I'm not going to be home until 10 o'clock tonight, you know, she understands that things go on at the at work here, and that is what it is. Now, it doesn't make her job any easier for trying to manage the family without me being there. But you know, those are the conversations that we had early on in my career when I was, you know, 20 years ago, when I told my wife, you know, this is the career I want to pursue and this is what it's going to look like. And at the time it was a lot of extra education and school of bank management stuff. And she saw what that looked like, and I got the green light from her to do it. And that's made it a lot easier on me. So I can only speak to my life and my family dynamic. My family's been real supportive of this. Even making the move from Virginia to West Virginia, you know, there was a lot of conversations within our family about, is this going to work for us? I mean, I'm from West Virginia, but we had put down roots in Virginia, and we had been in Virginia the last 20 some years. So, you know, to make the move to West Virginia, that was a lot of conversation that we needed to have. And my family was all about it. You know, they really love the idea of coming here. So It's been easy for me because I've got the family support, but I can understand where that challenge comes from.
I can really see that challenge. When I hear you speaking, I go back to your first few words that you said, communication. And you're showing that across all levels, which is fantastic. And a lot of CEOs run into that challenge. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. I'd like to jump into scaling now, because when you go become the CEO, you're done your first day, you're going through, and every board of director, every shareholder wants to see a growth and a great return on the business and their investments. So in scaling your organization, how do you identify new market opportunities and assets for potential growth?
That's a good question. And if I knew exactly what the magic bullet to that question was and what that answer was, then I don't know where I would be today. But I will tell you this. One of the things that I'm a big believer in is you've got to believe in the product that you're selling, and you've got to be able to deliver on the promises that you're making. So before we would try to go out and do some expansion or try to tackle a customer who's maybe a bigger customer than this bank's ever tackled before, we need to make sure that we've got our infrastructure in place. And that would be policies, procedures, the personnel who can support this, that we've got the products that are going to be competitive. And when we go through the process of evaluating what that is and maybe making a few fixes and maybe even hiring some staff where we feel like we need to hire people, then we have confidence that we can go out and deliver on promises that we're making. And we do have weekly meetings, and we talk about potential customers that are on the horizon and opportunities that are out there. We do communicate, and during that process, sometimes somebody will raise their hand and say, "Hey, you can't do that until we do this," so that we have confidence that we can go out and deliver on these things. Now, once we have sort of built out the foundation where we think, yeah, now we can tackle these types of customers, then it's a matter of hustling out in the community and getting the word out and actually delivering for customers who may tell somebody else that they've had a good experience with us. And I've done that over the years, and I'm in my early 50s now. I could say I've done that long enough now in banking where people know when they call me, there's something of an expectation of the service and the delivery that they're going to get. And they probably knew about me from some other customer who's referred them to me. And we've got other folks like that here too. So if we're going to, let's say, do an expansion, step one is to get the infrastructure in place. And then step two is bring on board the people here as employees who are in that market, who are in those circles, who already have those connections well established, get them on board here at the bank, and they'll bring the business along. And thus far I've only been here for a little over a year, but so far I can tell you that we've had a lot of success doing that.
That's a fantastic advice. I like that. I like your true in-depth policy. I really feel what you're saying, and that's really important because you look at scaling, and you look at scaling your business, and there's a number of ways you can do it, and each one of them has trade-offs on it. Technology is a fantastic thing, but I'm going to assume you have customers that maybe don't like technology, that some just want to come into the branch every time to do everything, whereas technology is allowing people to do it more online. How are you handling the difference to each one of those customers? Do you implement different strategies in for that, or is it a one strategy for all?
Well, ultimately the way we compete, and I'm speaking just for Citizens Bank of Weston, the way we compete is on a person-to-person basis. We like knowing who our customers are. We like making ourselves available to them. If I got to jump in the car and travel, across town, across the state, across the county, I will do that to go meet with somebody so that I can get to understand what their business is and what their business model is. And if they need our help for financing or account maintenance, whatever that is, I need to be able to get my hands a little dirty and understand exactly what their business is. Now, that can be hard to do if you're only using technology. So the way we think of technology here is it is a It's a bit of a noisemaker that's out there that lets the world know, hey, Citizens Bank is here. We're willing to help. But if you do have a loan request or you've got some funds that you need help managing, we're not going to just use the technology to try to conduct that transaction. We're going to pick up the phone, at least have an initial conversation. We're probably going to drive to you and get to know you, maybe over a cup of coffee. And we want to see if it's a good fit because we don't want to bring you into the bank if you're going to have a bad experience. And I don't want to start down the road of, yeah, we're going to do this big financing piece for you and mislead you. And then now you've spent, 3 or 4 months with me and I've asked you for all this financial information. And at the end of the day, I can't get something done for you. I'll at least want to have those initial conversations with you so that I can set a realistic expectation with you based on what you're telling me. It's going to take me this long, and this is all the information that I need, and this is the likelihood as to where this is going to end up. You can't really do everything that I'm talking about doing just through the technology. That certainly can facilitate a lot of those conversations. It can lead to initial conversations we otherwise wouldn't have had. But you're going to get a community banker experience when you come to Citizens Bank of Weston. And I know not everybody competes that way, and not everybody wants, everything that we deliver, but that's been successful for us, and we believe that's the best way for us to compete.
A bank that cares. I like that. I like that a lot. You know, I want to thank you for joining us, Scott. We're out of time here now, and I would really like to thank you for joining us on our podcast and sharing all of your insights. Your contributions have added tremendous value to our listeners, and your expertise and time is unbelievable. So we're looking forward to future collaborations with you. Thanks again for your time, Scott, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.